You know, did y'all notice he had a little extra song leading on that one? When it was time for the bass to come in, he pointed over there. Because I never know when to come in on that beat right there. Maybe you heard about the family that was in the hospital where a member lay gravely ill. And all the relatives were gathered in the waiting room, and the doctor finally came in looking just weary and tired and somber. He said, "I'm afraid I'm the bearer of some really bad news. The only hope left for your loved one at this time is a brain transplant. It's an experimental procedure. It's very risky, but it's the only hope that we have. And the insurance will cover the procedure, but it won't cover the cost of buying the brain." The family member sat silent as they absorbed the news. And Marty's enjoying this because she's waiting for the punchline here. And after a while, somebody finally asked, "How much will a brain cost?" And the doctor responded quickly, $5,000 for a male brain and $200 for a female brain. And the moment got really awkward. And some of the men, they were ducking their head, trying not to smile on this occasion, avoiding eye contact with the women. And finally, one man couldn't stand it any longer, and he blurted out the question that everybody wanted to ask, "Well, why is the male brain so much more expensive than the female brain?" And the doctor said, "Well, it's just standard pricing procedure. We have to price the female brain a lot lower because they've been used." Now, guys, you got to give me a little slack here, okay? Ladies usually draw up whenever I start telling the joke. So I'm balancing things out. This morning we began a lesson, a first part of a lesson that I entitled Choosing Life in a Culture of Death. And we started out with John chapter 10, verse 10, and read that passage perhaps from a little bit different perspective than we normally do, as a contrast of cultures. The world is a culture of death, and it's characterized by stealing and killing and destroying in lots of different ways, most of them cleverly disguised. And it occurred to me that there are lots of passages, but one that I thought I'd like to read to kind of reinforce that from Romans chapter 8. I begin reading in verse 5. "Those who live according to the flesh have their minds set on the flesh. But those who live in accordance with the Spirit have their minds set on what the Spirit desires. The mind of the flesh is death, but the mind controlled by the Spirit is life and peace. Because the mind of the flesh is hostile to God. It does not submit to God's law, nor can it do so. Those that are controlled by their sinful nature cannot please God." And then I'll skip down to verse 12. "Therefore, brothers, we have an obligation, but it is not to the flesh or to our sinful nature to live according to it. For if you live according to the flesh, you will die. But if by the Spirit you put to death the misdeeds of the body, you will live." You notice the phrase in verse 6, "the mind of the flesh is death." And then in verse 13, "if you live according to the flesh, you will die." The culture of this world is about dying, probably more than we really notice. In fact, if you listen to popular music, and it's not just the music of today, it's the music of yesterday also, there's a lot in it that has obsessions with dying. And it's really pretty morbid. We don't really think about it. The lyrics just kind of fly by. But there are a lot of songs that have to do with that are obsessed with death and dying. This world has a morbid obsession with death and dying. And it almost becomes a form of entertainment. It's really, really interesting how much of this world is centered around death and dying. And we ended this morning talking about this culture of death. Self-love is paramount. It's all that really matters. We mentioned that there are two holes in our heart. One is can be filled only by a relationship with God, and the second can be filled by a life partner, another person, a spouse, with whom we share life's joys and sorrows. Satan offers cheap imitations for both. For a relationship to God, and it tries to say and promise that it will deliver on the things that Christ has promised that He will deliver by some other means, stealing, as it were. And He promises the things that marriage promises that are designed to be gained in a marriage relationship through other ways, without the commitment of marriage, stealing. And going from one relationship to another to another. And that's why every society and every home that is not based on Christian principles brings pain and destruction. Now, I promised this morning that I would put a little addition in here about young people, how you can know if you're truly in love. And this is not going to answer everything, but it is going to be a clue. And it's kind of like a lot of other things in life. When you really get down to it, it's really a simple thing. It's not something that's hocus pocus or smoke and mirrors. There are really some ways that you can know if you're really in love or not. And having reared four daughters, then I've been through that some. And even more, to be honest with you, as I've directed camp for over 20 years, and it's amazing to me that young teenage girls can fall in and out of love three times in 1 week. And have their heart broken and be sitting around all their friends patting them on the back and they're crying, you know, because their heart's been broken, and it can happen as many as three times in one single week. And so we need to know something about how I can tell if I'm truly in love. This culture of death is about me and my needs, my fulfillment, my joy, my contentment, and above all, my happiness. And I don't know why, out of many, many hours spent in counseling, there was early in my preaching life, there was a young lady who came in, and I remember a line that she said to me that just was kind of like these guys, you know, when they heard about the cost of this brain, it's almost hard not to kind of duck your head and smile. She was just really extremely frustrated and crying, and she said, "I am 23 years old and I'm not happy." And I thought, what else is new? How many people are 63 years old, 83 years old, and not happy? It's like life had just come to an end for her. Well, here's the key that I'm going to share with you. True love seeks the happiness of another. True love is more concerned about the other person's happiness and welfare and contentment than it is your own. And when you find a marriage that's truly a happy marriage, where people are content in that marriage, where people are fulfilled in that marriage, you find two people who are concerned about each other's happiness, about each other's welfare. But the lie is clearly on display. When you seek something where it cannot be found, the search by necessity must continue on and on and on with no end. And whatever of life may be found in this way will evaporate quickly and force the search to continue. And so those who live in a culture of death go from God to God, person to person, intimacy to intimacy, searching for something that they never will find because it cannot be found. That hole in your heart that longs for far that life mate, that spouse, that person with whom you can truly share life, cannot be found without a commitment of marriage. The society of death is always trying to legitimize and minimize the consequences and the actions that lead to death. That's what all of this stuff about abortion is. It's trying to allow sin and not have any consequences from it. And abortion is just an obvious illustration. There are many other such laws that are being contemplated even as we speak that are dealing with the very same thing. We want to minimize, if we can, completely do away with any consequences of sin. And anything in that search that so many people are involved in, whether it is to fill that hole in our heart that can be filled only with God or that can be filled only with another person in a committed marriage relationship, anything that gets in the way as we deny those things and we keep searching and keep searching and keep searching, anything that gets in our way is discarded and is considered to be the enemy. And for too many people in the culture of death, little unborn babies and the prospect of having a baby gets in the way. And so we have, in our society and in many other societies, we've made it possible for you not to have that consequence. And we've done so that it's such a common thing that it's acceptable in our society. But just here, we need to slow down just a bit and remember that the Apostle Paul reminds us that our true battle is not against flesh and blood. Our battle as Christian people is not against those who participate in the culture of death. Our battle is with the enemies, I forgot my passage in Ephesians, the powers of the unseen world of darkness. And our relationship to those people who participate in the culture of death is their salvation, not their destruction. And that's to be our goal, and we need to be reminded of that. Our true battle is against Satan, who's the author and the energizer of that culture that majors in events that lead to death, and a culture which itself is destined to die. And against the background of that culture of death which surrounds us all, we're called in Jesus Christ to choose something completely different, to choose life. I have come that they may have life, and they may have it to the full. It's an unavoidable choice which people of God are constantly faced with. Deuteronomy chapter 30, verse 11 through 20 says, "Now what I am commanding you today is not too difficult for you, are beyond your reach. No, the very word is near you. It's in your mouth. It's in your heart, so that you may obey it. See, I set before you today life and prosperity, death and destruction. For I command you today to love the Lord your God." Here is this decision to choose life. "To love the Lord your God, to walk in His ways, to keep His commandments, His decrees, and His laws. Then you will live and increase, and the Lord your God will bless you. But if your heart turns away and you're not obedient, if you're drawn away to bow down to other gods and worship them, I declare to you this day that you will certainly be destroyed. This day I call heaven and earth as witness against you that I have set before you life and death, blessings and curses. Now choose life, so that you and your children may live, and that you may love the Lord your God. Listen to His voice. Hold fast to Him, for the Lord is your life." In this matter before us today, how do we go about choosing life? Well, before you can have a beautiful garden in this sin-cursed world, there's something you have to do. You have to get rid of the weeds. And you have to get rid of all of them. And it's really easy to go along and pick out some of the most obvious ones, but you have to kill all the weeds. And since we have such a powerful, sinful nature within us, that nature must be crucified. The Bible speaks in those terms, doesn't it? Put to death, therefore, the deeds of the sinful nature. We have to crucify. How many times did Jesus say, if you're going to be my disciple, what's the first thing he said to do? Deny yourself. Take up your cross and follow me. But you see, we have a world that's trying to follow Jesus without self-denial and without taking up the cross. And we've even minimized that. We say, well, you know, we all have our crosses to bear. And we name some little petty something. When he talks about bearing your cross, he's not talking about something that is inconvenient in your life. He's not even talking about a difficulty in your life. He's talking about the fact that you pick up a cross and you head in a direction that you are going to give your entire life to Jesus Christ and in his service. That you know where this road ends. That we are, as the Apostle Paul says, accounted as sheep to be slaughtered. And we get in line when we become a Christian. And we know what's going to happen when we get to the front of the line. We're going to die for Christ. Now, some people have died violently for Christ as martyrs, like Stephen. Others have died more peacefully in their bed. But a Christian, every Christian, dies for Christ. And along that way, there are some things that we must deny ourselves. Things that Satan says, hey, you can enjoy these things. You can have these things. You can carry this with you. Jesus said, deny yourself. We reject selfishness. We reject immorality. As men and women of God, we reject the behaviors that lead to death and anything that is remotely associated with it. We commit ourselves to using our bodies only in ways that will honor the Creator. We avoid the easy conveniences of shameful practices which reach out and grasp for life in ways which guarantee that we'll never find it. That say, have it your way. You're worth it. We hold one another accountable in God's family for our marriages, for our friendships, for our relationships, because it's incredibly important, and those things direct our lives. Those things determine what we think about, what we're involved in. In a word, we demand life from one another. And that's one of the great values of being in God's family, is that we hold one another accountable. And whenever we live and act like, well, what I do is my business and what you do is your business, we're not living like God's family. We have a responsibility to one another, to encourage one another while it's called today. But there's even more. Clearly, Christian people are called to take a stand against abortion. But it's not enough to say, don't abort your babies. We have to find ways to help girls and women honor life by keeping their babies when that occasion arises. I want to read you part of a letter recently written to a preacher from a Christian lady. As you know, she says, I have been on both sides of this issue. I don't think it wise of us as Christians to tell these young girls no abortion without offering them the solution, which is adoption. I don't know any statistics on how many in the body of Christ have adopted children, but I have a feeling it's not nearly as high as it should be. I think a lot of encouragement should be given in this direction, as it is such a blessing to both adoptive parents and birth mother. From my perspective, adoption is God's answer to turning something very heart-wrenching into a blessing. I wish I had been offered this option and encouraged to accept it as a 16-year-old, I think it would have saved me from 10 years of guilt. Some in this room, in fact, a number in this room, and in our family here, have adopted into your earthly families, just as we have been adopted into God's family. And it's a blessing for all concerned, obviously not without its challenges, but it is something that we need as Christians to consider. And then, secondly, we need to choose life by teaching our children about the culture of life. And to help them know that we don't walk half in and half out of the world. That we don't live this way part of our life and this way part of our life. That we don't live as hypocrites. That we practice what we preach. And we preach what the Bible says and we teach what the Bible says. And we live that way in our homes. And when we're around the dinner table. And when we're sitting in front of the TV. And when we're involved in entertainment. Then we need to make sure that these are things that are associated with the culture of life and not the culture of death. We even abstain from certain things that we may have the liberty to participate in. You may have the right to do some things that it would be really wise for you not to do. If not for your own sake, for the sake of your children. Because whenever you take a liberty, then your children accept that as the very base standard. And they take liberty from there. And so it would behoove us to be really, really careful about our lives and to truthfully, honestly examine our lives and see if we're involving ourselves in things that are a culture of death. Things that are not constructive and do not promote the cause of Christ. In our churches, we need to teach the value of holiness and the purity of life. And we need to support those in our culture who work for life. Crisis pregnancy centers, for instance. And we have some here in our congregation who are involved in that. By establishing and are supporting alternative pregnancy services. And being involved in things like this in our community. It's so easy, isn't it? And I'm talking to myself too. It's so easy for us to become cloistered within these walls. And have our Christianity just within these walls. And not let our light shine to the community. And we need to be creative in ways that we reach out to people in crisis situations. Because quite often it is at that time, and only at that time in their life, that they're more susceptible to listening to the gospel call and feel a desperate need in their life, maybe a need that they'll never feel again. And if we're there with the gospel and we take advantage of those opportunities, then there'll be people who will be brought to Christ because of that, and lives that will be turned around, and our culture will become more a culture of life. The call of God is a call to mercy and not arrogance. And because you're not involved in a particular sin doesn't make you any better than anybody else. We're all sinners, saved by God's grace. Being a child of God does not make you superior. In fact, what it does, it makes you a servant. It releases you from bondage to yourself and from this culture of death that we live in. And if you've made abortion necessary in your life or easy, then there's forgiveness for you. If you've taken up residence in the culture of death, then Jesus Christ is the way out. And you can, as long as you live, you can choose life. And just like our passage that we read from Deuteronomy, God sets before you a way of life. Way of death. And he says, choose life. There is a sharp contrast. It's not blurry like the world has tried to make it. There is a sharp contrast between the lifestyle of life and the lifestyle of death. And as Moses reminded God's people a long time ago, God sets before you life and prosperity or death and destruction. He's waiting to receive you while we stand and sing.